Bring it, girl.
Hi, my name's Pam. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Pam.
And my sobriety date is April 3rd, 1987.
Yay.
My home group is Last Chance, and it's been Last Chance for, except for my first year, it was Green Lake, because I like Green Lake because Toby reminded me of my dad, Carl Brown of my first ex-husband, and all the rotten teenagers there of my children. So I was totally at home, and we dropped the F-bomb all the time. So, and my first service position was treasurer, because when they had the elections for new service positions, they said, is there anyone here that doesn't have any outstanding felonies? And I raised my hand. And so I was, you know, it was really a bunch of stinkers. So I'll give you a little bit of qualification. I am a Seattle girl, but I was born in Bremerton. Yay. And I was born 9 months after World War II ended. My dad had been a Navy chief and my mom was a welder at the shipyard. And they both drank like pigs. And they would have knockdown, drag-out fights. My dad was the caretaker of Roosevelt Field, the ballpark in Bremerton. And we lived in left field. We actually did. And, you know, the Bremerton Blue Jackets played. And my dad, you know, lined the field, turned the lights off and on, swept the stands at night. And it was a fabulous childhood, except when the times when my folks would be drinking and fighting. My mom finally left him with a broken jaw and the kids and the dog when I was 6 years old. My dad left there and bought the Whistling Oyster Tavern on Highway 101 in Quilcene. It's just up the road from the Gooey Duck Tavern in Brennan. And my mom bought the Fiddler's Inn in Wedgwood. So I've grown up in a drinking culture, and I wasn't going to be like that. I was a good kid. I went to Mass at Assumption Parish every Sunday and Holy Day, right on for Father Felix. He was never a creep. You know, a German Benedictine is, you know, and the first time when I was 15, I was griping about my folks, and Father Felix gave me a book to read, you know, about St. Francis of Assisi, and I said, well, that poor old bastard just doesn't understand what I'm going through. And it wasn't until 25 years later when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I found out what he was trying to, you know, get through to me. And that was about the time I started my drinking. I got drunk for the first time at 13, because I was the only girl. I have four younger brothers, and my brother Dan and I got a paper route together. And, you know, we each got about 30 bucks a month. And you can buy, you know, you get an older brother or somebody to buy you Thunderbird wine. That was my first. And the first time I stood up behind that paper shack and drank Thunderbird, and it coursed through my veins like liquid gold.
Nectar of the gods.
I was 5'8", and I was smart, and I was a good dancer. I did puke in the blackberry bushes, but that, you know, that didn't stop me. That kept me, you know, all through high school. And I entered high school, Roosevelt High, as an honor student, and I didn't find out, and another spoiler alert, until I was applying for graduate school. I graduated 769th out of my class of 814.
Wow.
My potential was in the shitter. So I'm sorry. I'm trying not to swear, but you know what? It's really hard for me. And I grew up, and I just read a book by Carl Marlantes about Finnish immigrants. And he said he wrote the book because his Finnish grandmother said, he asked her about someone, and she said, "That son of a bitch." And, you know, I grew up with people, you know, you ask about somebody, and we're Norwegian American, but my grandma and grandpa, "That son of a bitch, he'll rob you blind." So, you know, I mean, I don't think of swear words as swear words. I think them as adjectives, a descriptor.
Right.
So it's the very descriptor, you know, when you... Thank you. So when I was 18, I married this sailor that hung out at my mom's tavern because he was Catholic. he'd buy me all the beer and wine I could drink, and he was a carrier sailor, and carrier sailors go out to sea for 6 to 9 months. And I thought, you know, I like that in a man. You know, I mean, I'm just not, my brothers and I, we just don't live well with others. You know, we're like, people get on our nerves. They get on our last nerves. And so, bye-bye. And the checks kept coming in. But, you know, that when he was home, he got on my nerves. And because he was one of these Tura Lura Lura Irish drunks, you know, and he'd never pass out. And so sometimes I've knocked him out with an iron skillet. I knocked him out with wine bottles. And years later, I was on a bus with, you know, going to work here. And this woman who was a playwright, you know, we were just talking about our stories. And she ended up writing a play about my family and my story for the Fringe Festival. And it was called Things That Go Bump in the Night. And it was about domestic violence And the idea was that the woman was the perpetrator. And so when they performed this, you know, it is kind of a twist. But I I've got four brothers, and I'm fast on my feet, and I'm left-handed. You know, that left hooky. Yeah. Anyway, nobody, you could try to hit me once. But you know, anyway, that, you know, that's domestic violence. I have not hit anyone since I got sober. And, you know, and that's a long way. I used to be suicidal, you know, and then I became homicidal when I got sober. That's another good thing. And I always tell my sponsees, if you kill your husband, that's okay. You can go to Purdy and they have meetings there. Nice. And, you know, that's, but what happens is, well, not really. You know, I've always had a high capacity for alcohol and could still drive like this. So it wasn't, I never considered myself an alcoholic. I thought I was a companion drinker. And, you know, coming from that drinking culture, it was just the way we lived. And, you know, we've had my uncle a few years before I got sober, tried to get sober in AA, and he committed suicide when he was 2 years sober. And I have a feeling it was because he just couldn't tell his story to somebody else. And one of my first meetings that I went to was his group, you know, out of Martha Lake. And I've learned more from people that I didn't want to be like, honestly, than the ones that, because sometimes I think a lot of people who are really, really goody-goody are kind of phonies. You know, I always thought my alter ego was Holden Caulfield from Catcher in the Rye, because I can, you know, I can catch a phony in a minute. And I don't put up with that. You know, I'm just moved. I got to say, I'm moved by the room here tonight, because there's two kids here that, the girl was at my first meeting and she was celebrating a year, and her parents were there, and I used to go backpacking with them a lot and knew them. I'd run into them cross country skiing. And, you know, I'll say that this is a generational disease, because I have two brothers that followed me in here in my 20th year. One of them got sober and it was 50, and one at 51, and he'd been in his first treatment center when he was 21. So 30 years of being in and out, and I think he was in 9 treatment centers, and now he's got 14 years. And the other one got sober at 60, and he's got 14 years. So if you're new and you think that there's no hope, don't give up hope. And I've been able to watch the change in these guys, because I mean, they're both younger than me, and I protected them all through their childhood. And then when they got bigger, I could be the lippy broad at Roosevelt that nobody gave any crap to, because I had barely evolved brothers that could just put you in the hospital. And, you know, so that allowed me to be the, you know, who I wanted. But now these knuckleheads have become Christians and go to church, and, you know, and they... And they're really nice men. So I, you know, and they'll go, you know, Pam, you shouldn't get into fights anymore. Maybe you should start being nice to people. So I've got, you know, this family of people that we have to start being nice to people. They'll go, oh, Pam, you need to pause when agitated. And, you know, that's just, well, something that's been going through me, you know, through my mind. I go to, you know, I've never gone to less than 4 or 5 meetings a week, but during the pandemic, sometimes I go to 3 meetings a day. It's nuts. I go to STEM meetings. I go to Big Book. I go to 5 meetings a week in Scotland because I love these guys in Forfar. My buddy Rab has got 10 years now, and they don't go to Betty Ford or Hazelton or, you know, the California buds. They go to the Sunnyside Royal Lunatic Asylum. Wow. And, you know, I just think, damn, I want to go there. You know, if I ever had a slip, I'd ship me there and put me in with Rab, because there's old Margo who was living rough on a park bench, and they took her there. You know, so those are my kind of people. You know how when I walked into AA, I found my tribe, and now my tribe are these really lovely Scots. But there's a part here in Bill's story on page 13, and I'll tell you, I have probably read Bill's story, I don't know, I've sponsored a lot of women over the years. I've always had a sponsor, and I sponsor a lot of women. I always get a new girl. There's always somebody I'm taking through the book. And it wasn't until, okay, I'm 34 years plus, and when I was reading this on page 13, he says, I was to test my thinking by the new God consciousness within. Well, I was mad at God for a long time, but when I got to choose my own concept of God, and like he says, then it got okay. I still believe in my Catholic God, but I'm more of the belief that Jesus during the missing years went off and studied Buddhism. So, you know, when I got sober in AA, I was complaining about my shitty city job. They suggested that maybe I learn some skills, so I started at community college. I was at community college, North Seattle, for 8 years, and then moved on to the University of Washington for 4 more years and got a bachelor's degree. And the girl who graduated 769th out of the class of 814 was asked to join Phi Beta Kappa. Right. That's for smart folk. So I'm a Phi Beta Kappa. And then I retired from that city job, and they kept promoting me. You in the city, sometimes, I don't know why, I think they promoted me. Well, anyway, I was making a lot of money, but I decided I wasn't thrilled with what I was doing. So I applied for graduate school and became a teacher. And I taught high school for 20 years and just retired recently. But I loved, you know, I had to take about a 50% cut in pay, but what a life of love and service. And all of my students knew, I was pretty open about who I was. Last night I was at a meeting, and one of my girls, who's 21 now, when she was 13, her mom suicided. And then in ninth grade, her teacher, she was getting sober, and her teacher came to me and said, Pam, I know you're in AA. I want you to watch this girl. And so for the next 3 years, we were on her like this. And she, you know, she said, I know Miss Herring watched out for me. And I still, you know, watch out for her. And that's, you know, that's how we do it. You know, where I was under the radar in AA, because they have all these do-gooders who are, you know, like don't want to help people. But in AA, we're, you know, if I see a reason to reveal my anonymity, I do it, you know, and I did it a lot with my students. A lot of them were going out at lunchtime and buying drugs and, you know, they drink, and I'd say, you know, I was like you in high school. And they go, Miss Harry, what's the worst thing you do? And I tell them some of the worst things I did, and they love that, you know. And because for an adult to be honest with them, and I say, you know, you're I have a lot of friends who took that one hit too much of LSD and they're like dimwits now. So be careful, you know, with all that stuff. But that, getting back to that page 13, the line that struck me, common sense would then thus become uncommon sense. I was to sit quietly when in doubt, asking only for direction and strength to meet my problems as he would have me. See, I always reacted to what was going on to me. I didn't respond. I never paused. I was just always hypervigilant. You know, growing up in the home that I grew up in, it's like, in fact, the girl whose dad was my dad's partner at the Whistling Oyster became Dr. Claudia Black. She's, you know, she was going to go to college to find the cure to the illness that was killing her family because her brother died of muscular dystrophy. But when she got to college, she found out it was alcoholism. And her dad and my mom died in the same week from this disease. So, you know, I knew actually, my sobriety date is April 3rd, 1987, but I started in ACOA in 1980. And I found out that I've been affected by the drinking of my family and those around me. But it was kind of like Goldilocks. All these people just sat around bitching about their parents, and nobody was doing anything to change their lives. So I thought, well, this isn't working. So I went to Al-Anon. And I did that for 5 years, and I got a lot from those people, but truthfully, they were too nice for me. So when I sauntered into AA, you know, that day after, you know, a little hit of cheap brandy and homegrown weed, that was one thing. I used to grow halide weed in my attic to supplement my income, because I told my students and my kids, I just couldn't do Tupperware or Avon. I don't like, you know, I'm just not good at keeping paperwork. But so, you know, for my kids' violin lessons and soccer shoes and, you know, what the heck, what a skank. But, you know,
did you say what a skank?
Yes, skank, yeah. That's an old-fashioned word for gals like me, huh? Yeah. We used to say that about somebody, you know, she's so skanky. And you knew. Oh, she was a rosy round heels. And, you know, and that, you know, there's a lot of jokes in my family about that. But you know what? So when I walked in the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, my first meeting was on a Thursday night at the Northeast meeting. And I can almost still remember the people that were sitting around the table that night. And what I heard at that first meeting was hope. Because all my life, I felt like I was different than others. My family was different than others. When I was in sixth grade, a book came out called Peyton Place. And I thought, my mom was like Ada Jacks. And she really was. My mom was like, ah, for Christ's sakes, what's the matter with you? You know, God, son of a bitch. You know, my mom, poor, pitiful pearl. I mean, it was, God love her. She kept a clean house and she supported us. I went to the dentist and had good shoes all the time. But that was, you know, there was just not a lot of emotional support. And, you know, and we ran wild. You know, it was us and the Dugan boys and all these kids whose parents were, you know, like my parents. And I'm not blaming my parents. My mom grew up in a tar paper shack during the Depression. Her dad, you know, they lost their farm in North Dakota, and he worked at the Fort Peck Dam and in eastern Montana. My mom quit school when she was 16 because she was oldest of six kids and went to California and worked. And the war broke out. She became a welder at the shipyard. And you know, she was sending money back to support her family. My dad, he was one of five kids, and his mom died when he was 14 months old. He was the second to the youngest. And his dad raised five kids on his own. So my dad never knew a mother. You know, people like that are not set to be good parents. They had hard, hard lives. And, you know, when I worked the steps and realized they did the best they could, they really wanted a good life for us. I know, I mean, my mom took me to the dentist when I was a little kid, and she didn't go to a dentist till she was in her 20s. You know, she bought us shoes at Christensen's where they x-rayed your feet and gave you Red Goose shoes. And she had, you know, she had shoes that had holes in them, and they cut out newspapers. You know, they did what they thought was the right thing for them. But, you know, I did the same for my kids. But when you're a drunk, you're not emotionally, or, you know, you're not emotionally there for your kids. I gave my kids a roof over their head, took them backpacking. We couldn't afford Disneyland. I'd give them garbage bags for rain gear, but they grew up, you know, knowing, I mean, we had some good times, but they still had a mother who, my moral compass was off. There were too many strange men that were in the house. And I hope to God that, and I've made amends to my kids, and it's been different. My children are in their 50s now. They were 18 and 21 when I got sober. In fact, I'll tell you what happened was they'd gone to college in the, you know, where their dad was from. Their dad was from Kentucky. He was from the same town that Rosemary Clooney's from, you know, where they were shanty boat Irish. And, you know, they invited me back for Christmas of 86. And my first grandchild had been born. Joe was 4 months old. And we went to midnight mass on Christmas Eve. And I was holding Joe on my shoulder. And it came over me, if I didn't drink, maybe Joe would have a better life. And you know what, last weekend, we went to Joe's little boy's first birthday party. Yeah. Royce was, and he's got a 4-year-old and a 12-year-old, but you know, he and his partner there, Royce was born 3 months premature, so it was a miracle. He's full size now, and he's very much loved. And I have 6 grandkids and 7 grandkids. I mean, 7 great-grandkids. I'm a great-grandmother. And we do a lot in our family. I got to go to Mexico this summer. There were 13 of us. And I'd be laying in bed with my great-grandkids, Bobby and Emmy Lou, reading Berenstain Bears. And, you know, I'd catch them on the slides. We'd go beachcombing. You know, it's the things that, I mean, I'm respected and loved by my kids and grandkids today. And, you know, I've been, like I say, in my home group for 33 years. And, you know, I do service. I have a new girl who's, what has she got, like 74 days now or something. And we meet every week. And like I say, I've always had a new girl. I have a lot of sponsees that have a lot of time, and we still are connected. But we go through the book, and we have, you know, there's things that I ask them to do. I pass on what was told to me. Don't get too well too fast. You know, it's not like, you know, you graduate from anything. Like I say, I've read this Bill story, I don't know, hundreds of times. And every time I go to a STEP meeting or a traditions meeting, we read something and holy cow, when did they put that in there? You know, there's always something. And I was talking to a friend who is just getting ready to do her 4-step, and she's all worried about it. I said, you know, don't just do the best you can right now. Because I was 6 years sober, and I was driving somewhere, and it came over me. I always considered my brothers the boys. I've always treated them like the boys. And I never treated them as peers, as men who were worthy of my respect. So I had to make amends anew to them. And that was, you know, that was a huge thing. Until we have that awareness, there's a lot of, I still have so many character defects. You know, because I'm ACOA, I'm hypervigilant and I'm quick on the draw. I still am. I'm more one of those ready, fire, aim people. So if I think somebody's disrespecting me. And, you know, there's something about little old ladies who are 5'1½". You know, people try to be condescending to me. And that just doesn't work well for them.
I wouldn't.
And sometimes I go a little far and have to make amends, But you know, I just think, well, like, I just want to go to Texas now and duke it out with a few people. But you know, I pause when agitated and try to do the right next right thing. But you know, it's we keep going. Like, I'm on this. Lara talked about me being on the corrections committee. I've been on it for 26 years, and I keep rotating positions. I've been everything from literature chair, recording secretary, blah, blah, blah. Now I'm the chair. And, you know, somebody came to our meeting last week and was suggesting that we need to, you know, maybe rotate out. It's, you know, it's time for the spirit of rotation. And I just thought, okay, good, that'd be fine. And then a few days later, I was at the area quarterly. And, I mean, there's one old guy who's been going into Clallam County Jail for 30 years. A lot of us, I've been going into King County Jail for 26 years. And, you know, there's Barbara here is one of my jailbird friends. I was just talking to another person yesterday who said, I miss going to jail, you know, and that's because it's such good service. When we go in and take a meeting into those women, and, you know, the women go into the meetings for the women, men go in for the men, it's really a humbling experience, not just to meet the people in there, but what we have to go through. You know, we're not really that welcome. We're there to serve, you know, I mean, we're there at their pleasure or whatever. And sometimes we have to wait a half hour sitting in this room that smells like dirty old gym socks or something, because the guards just think that we're, you know, there have been some guards that have disrespected us, but we just sit there and act nice. We'll read a grapevine article to one another. You know, there's always two of us that go in. And actually, the guards are starting to like me after 25 years. I don't know. You know, I mean, they know I'm not there to cause trouble. And it's funny how this can go throughout the community. I think my time is winding down. So I'm just gonna, you know, I just wanna say thank you to all of you for my sobriety. I wanna thank these guys for bringing this good history back. Another thing before I really don't like people from California. So if you're from California and wanna teach me how to do AA right, let's go out in the parking lot. Because I love the people here. And there's so many old timers that were so kind to me. A lot of them are at the big meeting in the sky. Big Jim, Rosemary, Bjorn, Steve, you know, we were with Steve Burke his last week. You know, we helped him bust out of the one home he was in because they put him in with some nut with Alzheimer's that wouldn't shut up. So we busted him out and got him to a better home. And, you know, we do the right thing. And those people, you know, we stand on the shoulders of giants here. And so I thank all the people in this room for my sobriety. I mean, Scout even back there. You know, I'm in Fremont, they always gave people nicknames. And a couple weeks ago, some guy walked in here to buy a big book, and Lara and I double teamed him. And I call him Scout because I said, those people that go out and try drinking again and come back into the fort full of arrows, I'm too much of a pussy to do that. So I thank Scout for doing that, and I thank all of you. So enough out of me. What do you think about me?